This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiologists' extended learning series featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You're about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, you will have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access to your mobile device. And each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/AXL. Next up, Nanette Winger is joined by Deepak Bhatt, Executive Director of Interventional Cardiology Program at the Brigham and Women's Hospital and professor at Harvard Medical School in Boston. They cover the subject, the primary results of the REDUCE-IT trial.
Let's start with defining for REDUCE-IT. What was the hypothesis that underlies the study and obviously the drug that was studied?
Absolutely. Well, the hypothesis was that icosapentaenoic acid, which is an omega-3 fatty acid, would reduce important cardiovascular outcomes, and that's based on some epidemiology. For example, populations that eat a lot of fish, coastal populations in Japan, for example, to generalize, seem to have lower rates of coronary artery disease. And an older randomized open-label trial called JELIS had used 1.8 grams of an EPA construct and randomized patients to receive that or control. There was no placebo in that trial. It was a limitation. And it showed a 19% relative risk reduction in cardiovascular events. And therefore, we studied a different molecule at a higher dose, 4 grams of icosapent ethyl, which is a highly purified EPA. It's available only by prescription. It's indicated for patients with triglycerides above 500, but we wanted to study patients with triglycerides below 500 at higher cardiovascular risk to see if it might reduce cardiovascular events.
So describe the trial then. Who were the patients that you included in this study?
Sure. 8,179 patients with triglycerides between 135 and 500 milligrams per deciliter were randomized and followed for an average of about 5 years. The patients beyond the triglyceride entry criteria also had to have an LDL between 40 and 100 and be on statin therapy. So we wanted patients that were well treated with statins. We didn't want to just take an undertreated population and then to use a prescription drug. So that was the lipid type criteria. And the clinical criteria to come in was modeled a bit after the older CHARISMA trial, where we took patients, about 70% who were secondary prevention, and about 30% that we called primary prevention. And secondary prevention really meant stable coronary artery disease, cerebrovascular disease, or peripheral artery disease. And primary prevention, as we used it, meant diabetes on medical therapy plus at least one additional cardiovascular risk factor.
So you're dealing with essentially a high-risk primary prevention population.
All right, though, with secondary prevention as well with the established CAD, CVD, or PAD.
Now the results of results of REDUCE-IT.
So that is a great point to pivot to. So the results, first of all, let me say that the primary endpoint was cardiovascular death, MI, stroke, hospitalization for unstable angina, coronary revascularization, so-called five-point MACE. And there was a 25% relative risk reduction in that endpoint, a 4.8% absolute risk reduction, a number needed to treat of 21 over about 5 years, with a p-value of 0.0000001. So a highly statistically significant finding in terms of risk reduction. Beyond that primary endpoint, our key secondary endpoint was the composite of cardiovascular death, MI, stroke, so-called hard events. And there was a 26% relative risk reduction. Again, statistically significant with a p-value of 0.0000006. So both the primary and key secondary endpoints very statistically significantly reduced. And beyond that, a number of individual endpoints and composite endpoints that we pre-specified and examined were also significantly reduced, including a 20% reduction in cardiovascular death, a 28% reduction in stroke, a 31% reduction in MI, and significant reductions in hospitalization for unstable angina, in emergent or urgent revascularization, in elective revascularization, in sudden cardiac death, and cardiac arrest. So those variety of secondary and tertiary endpoints were all significantly reduced.
Within this spectrum of very favorable outcomes, why don't you review with us the safety and the tolerability of this preparation?
So the drug was as well tolerated as placebo in the trial. And in terms of safety, we looked very closely, as much as time allowed, between when I was unblinded and presenting these data. And what we found was a statistically significant increase in the rate of adjudicated atrial fibrillation or flutter, about a 1% increase, about 2.1 to 3.1% was the rate over the course of the trial. Though fortunately, as I mentioned, at least overall in the trial, there was no excess in stroke. In fact, there was a statistically significant 28% reduction in stroke. So at least looking at the overall trial population, it seemed like that atrial fibrillation risk was relatively small. The other thing that we noted was a trend, not statistically significant, but with a p-value of 0.06, a trend towards more major bleeding. But that wasn't an adjudicated endpoint. That was based off so-called treatment-emergent adverse events, and that was really lumping together all sorts of bleeding. But looking at things more precisely, there was no significant difference in intracranial bleeding, no significant difference in GI bleeding. There were no fatal bleeds to speak of. So overall, I would say a good safety profile and a very good tolerability profile.
Given this, given the results, the safety and the tolerability, what do you see the place for this drug in clinical practice? Again, you studied it at top adequate doses of statin therapy. So how do you see its use in clinical practice?
Great question. So you mentioned statin. So the average LDL coming into the trial in these patients was 75 milligrams per deciliter. So really quite well controlled. The average triglycerides were 216, so elevated but not super elevated. So I think these are results that likely would be applicable to a pretty broad segment of the patients that I'm treating for sure. In terms of the trial itself, we screened 19,000 of those, randomized 8,179, 43%. So I think the trial results will be quite generalizable. Now, the drug itself, as I think I mentioned, is FDA approved for use in patients with triglycerides over 500 to prevent pancreatitis. We studied it at lower level triglycerides to prevent cardiovascular events. So to use it in the population we studied would be off-label use. However, you know, of course, that sort of thing's up to a physician. And I think the data are really quite compelling. And, you know, it's hard to know at this exact point in time when the trial has just come out, just published in New England Journal of Medicine. But my hope is that in years to come, when we look back, this trial will be viewed in the same sort of paradigm-shifting way that the early statin trials were. Not when statins were just shown to reduce LDL, that was important, but when they went one step further and showed that they reduced cardiovascular events, and then one step further still when they were shown to reduce death from cardiovascular causes. So I think we've found a new avenue towards cardiovascular risk reduction. The drug seems to have pleiotropic effects. It does lower triglycerides by about 20%, CRP by about 20%, but most of all, it raises EPA levels by 360%. So I think most of the benefit is probably from the EPA, but the triglyceride reduction and inflammation reduction probably helps a bit too.
Well, again, this seems to be a very promising drug for an addition to our armamentarium in treating patients with lipid disorders. Thank you very much.
This is Spencer King, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/Axel.